JC2S, Part 1.
Number 22B.
All right, so we begin to just crack open then this point of principle is life. Now, she says right away here in shows that, and we just keep listening now for the main tone again, that the main tone in the subtone, that science demonstrates ontology, the science of real being, and overthrows all other systems which are antagonistic to true being. So here she shows that we must abandon all these theories which are antagonistic to Christian science, which are basically pantheistic. And so all those theories that want to hold spirit in the grasp of matter, in the grasp of material reasoning. She says, Christian science, we now know, overthrows all that. The science of the Christ comes and overthrows pantheism, the belief of spirit in matter. And she says, and goes all with it, goes all those isms and ologies that are on that basis. And she says, let the science of Christ do it. Let it overthrow it. And therefore, she says, and let's take up ontology. And she said, and we don't have any will here. We must abandon pharmaceutics, just one of these pantheistic beliefs. And we must take up ontology. The Christ is going to make us do it. And then she says, and defines ontology. She says, we must take up ontology, and I define it as the science of real being. Do you hear? Principle is life. The science of real being. So the science, principle of real being, life. So ontology is the science of life. The science of real being. Principle is life. And what happens in ontology, which is the science of life, little life, lowercase life, little being, huh? The science of being. Well, what it does is it makes us look deep into realism instead of accepting only the outward sense of things. So the science of ontology, which is a science of real being, which is that principle life, that principle lives. And when she says that ontology means to look deep into the realism, what is it looking deep? That's life. Life looks deep into what? Realism. What is the realism under consideration here? The fixed principle. See, she showed already in principle is principle that there's a fixed principle, which is God, that the science of God is based on a fixed principle. And now principle always demonstrates itself as life. We learned that in our study of the compendium, the flow from principle to life, that it's principle hyphen life. That principle lives, that principle has an expression, that principle is the real being of our life. So that's ontology. That fixed principle lives as a science of ontology. That principle which lives is called ontology. And ontology has us look deep, huh? That's life. Look deep. Look deep into things. Don't just go after the superficial things of life, but learn what the deep things of God are. And then, she goes on to further define ontology to bring out what these deep things of God are. On page 460 in the textbook, she says, well, we can look if you've got the book there, 460, line 3. She says, ontology is defined as the science of the necessary constituents and relations of all being, and it underlies all metaphysical practice. Our systems of mind healing rest on the apprehension of the nature and essence of all being. on the divine mind and love's essential quality. You hear the fixed principle? She says that ontology is defined as the science, there's the principle, of the necessary constituents and relationship of all being. There it shows that ontology is just that science. We could call our work then divine ontology. It's just that science which is based on that fixed principle, which talks about the deep things of God, which talks about the constituents. What are our constituents? The big three categories, of the nature of God, the operation of God on the different levels. And so she says that it's based on these constituents and their relationships as the underlying all metaphysical practices. So we have the constituents of God, the nature of God as mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love, and its relations being related through the fourfold operation of Word, Christ, Christianity, and science on the levels of science itself, divine science, and absolute Christian science. That makes up the constituents and the relations in the divine ontology. As she just goes on to say, and this ontology is a system of mind healing which rests on the apprehension of the nature and essence of all being, on the divine mind and love's essential qualities. So we have here now that principle is life, that this principle of ontology lives, it has life, it has evolution on the basis of a fixed principle. So here we really get the theory of life, the evolution of life, the theory of life, the theory of evolution, principle in life. And it's enormous, the implications of the theory of evolution. But that theory of evolution is based on a fixed science. It's that fixed science evolves. That fixed science has within itself trustworthy methods for the discovery of new truths within its domain. And what happens within a fixed science in order that something new comes out of it? The restructuring, huh? That fixed principle, those category of God, are always restructuring themselves. And in the restructuring of that fixed principle always comes something new. And we know in every science, in art or music, that every science evolves from these fundamental few root notions, which are constantly restructuring themselves, bringing out something new. So this is what this is showing. And it says, now, look deep into this theory of life. And you'll see that there is a scientific way of life, that there is a scientific method of life based on a fixed principle. And we saw that yesterday when we went over the fourfold aspects of the holistic philosophy. And we saw there at the point of the Christ that the scientific method of life, the scientific method of investigation, always was that which brings life to the system. And we saw then that scientific method of investigation, that scientific way of life, can only be based on the criteria of the basic constituents of reality. Therefore, we saw, in order for a science to evolve, in order for a science to be revolutionary and to evolve itself, that it has to be based on the criteria, on elements. It has to have holistic elements. It has to be based on categories, which reduces the infinite to simplicity. It has to be based on categories, which are related by laws. And then seeing how those categories which are related by laws are embodied in a system whose relationships of holistic categories are held together by these laws. And then we see that system has no beginning and no end, that we can start anywhere in that system. We can play with the system. That's life, huh? that that system has structure, it has life. And therefore, we can begin anywhere with that system play with it, so to speak, by accentuating the different parts within that structure. And we see that structure, in its interrelationships of parts, that those parts always reflect the general characteristic of the whole structure. So that this principle of life comes forth on that basis of a fixed principle, a fixed structure, which is constantly like a kaleidoscope restructuring. And out of its restructuring comes the newness, comes that which evolves the science. And therefore, it evolves it, we saw, dimensionally, as a holistic evolution through its dimensional hierarchies, which are nested. It's nested hierarchies. That shows the possibilities for that system to evolve because of we see the side. It evolves. That nested hierarchy has no beginning, no ending, and therefore it evolves because within that the operating power in that nested hierarchy is cybernetic. It has within itself its own inner dynamics, which evolves the system and keeps it spiraling higher and higher from a boundless basis. So you see, that point we saw yesterday, the needing for a scientific method of life based on elements and categories and laws which relate categories and systems and structures which have no beginning and end, which are nested and which are always evolving, that is the theory of evolution. And that theory of evolution holds up good in all science, in all theology, and in all medicine, and in our life. That is what is evolving our life. We see now it evolves science, don't we? We see that science based on on ontology, on divine ontology, on these basic constituents of reality, which are constantly evolving through that feedback system, constantly bringing the infinite spiraling from a basis, that those categories evolving are evolving science. Science includes within itself trustworthy methods for the discovery of new truths within its domain. It is not only evolving science, but it's evolving our consciousness. Because the structure of science, which is a structure of reality, is one with our structure of consciousness. When we let the categories of science structure our consciousness, when we concept build and tonality build and consciousness build with along the lines of the divine ontology, along the lines of that fixed principle, then the structure of reality through concept building, tonality building, consciousness building becomes the structure of our very own being. And our consciousness has evolved through this very same method that has evolved science, through the categories, through our oneness with the categories. And when the structure of reality and the structure of consciousness becomes one, then those categories evolve us. And we saw we are those categories in operation. We are the language of spirit in operation when the structure of consciousness and the structure of reality are one. So we see that point where Mrs. Eddy wanted to bring this out, that this theory of evolution, this theory of life, she says, is ever at work. She says both science and consciousness are now at work in the economy of being, according to the law of mind, which ultimately asserts its absolute supremacy. She's showing, therefore, that theory of life is now at work in science and in consciousness, and it's operating according to the economy of being. What is more economical than the 15 root notions of being? That's the most economical thing in the universe, isn't it? So science and consciousness are now, that's life at work. So it's a principle which is life in the economy of being. And according to what? According to the law of mind, huh? Principle is mind, according to the law of mind, which ultimately must assert its absolute supremacy according to the goal causality laws of mind. Therefore, that principle which is love. So if we quickly go through then, we see that it's at work according to goal causality, wholeness causality, a principle which is love. But first let's take a look at principle is truth. And she shows, therefore, that as Max has epitomized here, I think quite nicely, yes, as he shows then here that the epitome is principle is truth, as there is no error in science, the actuality of science demonstrates harmony with the divine principle of all being, by destroying all discord. So we hear now this sense then that that universal science, that universal fixed principle, now is the universal remedy, is the truth for all sciences, insofar that it demonstrates all error in science and it demonstrates the actuality of science. Something which we would see here if we had time to read through Mrs. Eddy's text, but you have the method, and I just want to finish up now. So you see that she brings out, and we'll see when you read it, that it's on this fixed principle, that's the principle, do we get the universal remedy, truth. Actually, the universal remedy for all error in science. That this science is going to be that which will save all sciences, all theology, and all medicine. And therefore, that truth, she shows, must be demonstrated. And therefore, it will be demonstrated there's many musts in this subtone. So she says this truth must be demonstrated, and it will be demonstrated by the Christ in his translation and retranslation, and it will destroy all discord in science, theology, and medicine, and will demonstrate it by itself the only reality, which is the actuality of science. Truth is principle. It's going to bring out the actuality of science. And then, as she goes on, then with the subject, she goes on to the point of love, where Kapler has epitomized it. Principle is love. In science, through the superiority of spiritual over physical power, the false testimony of the corporeal senses disappear. So let's read that. That's a short one, and it's wonderful, starting on 131.6. When once destroyed by divine science, see, she brings us back, I learned these truths in divine science, the evidence before the corporeal senses disappears. Hence, the opposition of sensuous man to the science of soul and the significance of the scripture, the carnal mind is enmity against God. The central fact of the Bible is the superiority of the spiritual over physical power. So here she shows this that this destruction by science with the universal remedy of truth, that goes on only because in divine science, that science of God is all, and there is no other science. And so that on that fact, we have the disappearance of the corporeal sense testimony, the basis of any other science. And she shows there this point of sensuous man. She's just bringing in now that point where she began her reasoning by saying, well, remember that the problem was the sensuous reasoning from sense testimony, That built up a sensuous philosophy. And the outcome was sensuous man. And that we saw was the psychical air, the air of consciousness, which is the greater air. When man's harmony was affected by a false reasoning, and he became nothing more than a lowly sinner, that affected the identity of man, and that, she said, was all based on that sensuous reasoning which brought forth the sensuous philosophy. Now, sensuous man disappears, and as we have seen, and only man in God's image and likeness appears. And she says that the problem of sensuous man today is that it has enmity of God, the humid hatred for truth. And she makes very clear in this in the textbook that the opposition to divine science will be great. She says it's going to be because of the tenacity of the illusion, but much more because of the human hatred for truth, the human hatred for wanting to go forward, for letting the Christ take it forward. And as we know, that hatred isn't anything conscious. It's just those subconscious and unconscious false beliefs within consciousness that do not want to go forward. The inertia within consciousness that resists. And that is subconscious and unconscious. And she says that is going to be the claim against divine science. Is this hatred for the truth operating on a subconscious and unconscious level? But she says, don't worry about it. And she'll show it in many ways. How it's handled by a divine principle love. And she shows in the textbook, and you can look it up, how one doesn't fear this hatred for the truth. She shows that how she shows love in the textbook from a multidimensional standpoint, because it's that all-inclusive love which handles the belief of hatred against divine science. She says, from the standpoint of Christian science, clad in the panoply of love, capital love, human hatred cannot reach you. And then she says, in the textbook, that was on Science and Health, page 571, from Christian Science level. Then from the Absolute Christian Science level on 574, she says, note this, that the very message of the swift-winged thought, which poured forth hatred in torment, brought also the experience which at last lifted the seer to behold the great city, the four equal sides of which were heaven bestowed and heaven bestowing. She's saying, the armies of evil are the armies of the Lord. That very hatred is going to make us turn away forever from the belief of life in and of duality and turn towards the great idea of divine science. Turn away from hatred and turn to the love, to the great city, the city that lieth four square. And therefore, the hatred will be not an enemy, but it can be seen not as evil, but as good, because it turns us away from the false calculus and turns us to the city of God. And then she shows from the divine science level on page 575 that the true sense of love, she says, is beholding the Lamb's wife, of love wedded to its own spiritual idea, of love never losing sight of loveliness. So if we go out from divine science and know that mind can never lose sight of mind, and spirit can never lose sight of spirit, and soul can never lose sight of soul, and principle can never lose sight of principle, and life can never lose sight of life, and truth can never lose sight of truth, and love can never lose sight of love, that love is always wedded to its own idea and can never lose sight of itself. It's really hid in this, in our inseparable union with the principle where love never loses sight of loveliness, that we're hid with Christ and God, safe in soul, and we're untouched by human hatred. It cannot touch us when clad in the panoply of love. It's on a dimension where the science of God, it cannot penetrate it. And Jesus was at work in divine science, and all human hatred was unknown in that consciousness. It could not touch him and did not touch him. So it shows the safety of our consciousness at work in divine science to take up the new birth, to go from metaphysics to science, to take on the challenge of this chapter. Men and women, are we ready to stick up for this higher order of science? She said, take the challenge of the sixth chapter. Make the step in consciousness. Let the Christ make the step in consciousness to bring us from metaphysics, from the Bible, through the early chapters of the textbook, into science, and to go out from divine science and from the standpoint of Emmanuel, God with us, and that this will act as a law of annihilation to everything else that isn't like God in the world through its retranslation. But in that consciousness of divine science, error is unknown. Error is excluded, I mean. Error is excluded and precluded. Hatred is excluded and precluded. We just cannot be touched by it in this standpoint. So she makes that a big point here as she closes that principle of love tone. And she shows then through this whole chapter then that principle is love, that principle is goal causality, that the principles of the world aren't goal causality, they're selfishness causality, they're human theory causality. But this principle is universal causality, not selfish causality. And therefore, it's a principle which is a universal principle, a principle which is goal causality insofar that its goal is oneness causality, to bring out our inseparable union with the principle. And we've seen it in here that this is what the Christ in his translation and retranslation is doing, is bringing out through soul the inseparability between the subjective and objective, always making it one. Always we saw that was the big point of this subject, to bring out oneness causality, where the subjective principle and its idea is one, and this one is principle, brought to us through the Emmanuel in its translation and retranslation. And it's not only bringing out oneness causality, but wholeness causality. We see, therefore, that this principle operates holistically, as a whole, and therefore every level of consciousness is showing wholeness causality. The level of science itself showing that infinite principle is infinite wholeness itself. And the level of divine science showing wholeness and oneness, how principle and its idea is one, and this one is principle. And the level of Christian science, absolute Christian science, showing wholeness brought out through that calculus of ideas that cannot be broken up. And the level of Christian science, bringing wholeness out through the equipollence of God, through showing us that there is only the reality of God going on, hence the awful unreality called evil. And you see, that's the divine principle, which is love, isn't it? And that is then how she ends the subtone and says that ever operative principle, that science of God, it's a principle of which is love. And that is what is going to be brought out in the whole universe. That goal through the Christ and his translation and retranslation, that oneness and wholeness is being brought out, bringing us from the first degree of misunderstanding through the second degree of misunderstanding disappearing into the third degree of spiritual understanding and our participation in the universe as this system, this science of God in operation. So that's the end. We made it. And thank you very much.